You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in our March Around the World series, we are going to visit a port of call outside of the Anglosphere and outside of the entire extended Western world and even the Eastern European world. We are entirely abroad now, going down to South America and making a stop in Brazil this hour with a very good near and dear friend of mine, a man who has contributed to every quarterly fundraising drive for as long as I can remember. But that's not why we're having him on. We're having him on because he is a fantastic contributor in his own right, and he's made a handful of short appearances with us in the past, and this one is going to be his most profound and extended to date. And so we will not mention his name because he does have a prestigious position down in Brazil, and he's a family man, so we're not going to risk that. So we will just label him as our South American correspondent. And my friend, it is great to have you back tonight as March Around the World now extends to South America. How are you down there?
Hi, James. I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for having me again. It's a pleasure and an honor to be in this show, to be in the March Around the World series. It's a great series. I love the series.
Well, we love it too, and we love having you on tonight. We got a lot to cover with you, so let's just, like we did with Tom Sunich, let's just get right down to it and see how much we can cram into this hour. So let's first celebrate the inclusion of Brazil in our march around the world and also meditate on some of these issues. In your opinion, is the disease of the West restricted to developed first world countries?
So I sent you that, James. It's a questioning because sometimes I hear people in the show talking about the immigration and the flooding of poor country people to developed countries. That's just the way it is. But if you look at the things that happens in Brazil as to the way of the culture, of the demise of Christianity, the Christian values, they are all the same. They're really very much alike. The way the left works is really, really, really much the same. And if you take a closer look, you see that Brazil and leftists in Brazil and the politicians, they almost copy what the leftists in the U.S. are doing with a little bit of a delay, something that is getting closer with the globalism and everything. But it's just the same. You saw the January the 6th, and we just had our January the 8th. It's very close and very related.
Yes, and we're going to get to that in just a moment because you have already been on twice in recent weeks to talk about the unrest there with the election between Bolsonaro and Lula and your own version of January 6th. You were on not long ago at all to talk about that. So we are going to get an update from you on that in just a moment. But first, in the broader, grander scheme of things, what makes a third world nation? And why would Western leaders, the leaders of the United States, the leaders of Western Europe, want to replicate the miseries of a third world nation in what was a previously high quality, high trust society?
So I've been dealing with this questioning about what makes Brazil, which is a very large country and a very rich country, a third world nation. And if we look at back at the beginning of the last century, the difference were smaller between Brazil and the United States in some ways.
Brazil makes up about half of South America. If you look at it, it looks like it makes up about half of the entire continent.
Sure. And I also sent you that stuff about the Confederates that came to Brazil after the war.
I want to ask you a whole other question about that.
So about these questions, what comes to my mind is the stock of the people, you know, the quality of the people, and that struck Emperor of Brazil back then, and I guess that we didn't make. Brazil never was able, and the whole of Latin America never was able to get a better education system. And concerning the uprising of people to make them better people, better citizens, and better care of the population as a whole. I don't know. I don't know why the U.S. want to turn the United States of America into a Brazil country or something worse. I cannot answer that question. I keep on trying to find some economical issue, but I just can't find anything.
Doesn't make sense to rational thinking people like you. Am I right? I mean, why would you want to trade down? Not that we're trading down if we have people like you, but unfortunately not everybody. From other places, have your intellect and your loyalty and your dedication to truth and all of the good things we stand for here.
Yeah.
All right. So let me.
We gotta.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I just gonna say that we gotta remember that Latin America is also a Christian country and is also an European raised countries. So this is. This is the end result of the occupation of Spanishes and Portuguese. So and then later
is that your native tongue? Is your native tongue English or Portuguese?
Our native tongue is Portuguese.
Interesting.
Which is a little bit different from the Portuguese of Portugal.
And you speak English better than I do, so that's very interesting.
oh my God. So it's mainly Roman Catholic countries, and now we're always divided. So this I keep on thinking in the bigger picture, this is the end of Christianity, right? It's happening everywhere in the Western world. We should be considered also Western world down here.
Yeah, you know let me ask you this, because as I said with Tom Sunich, I had a. When he was on, I had a map of the Balkans that was pulled up here in the studio, and now I have a map of South America, and I'm looking at Brazil, and I'm not going to let the audience know exactly where you live in Brazil, but I'm looking at the area in which you live, and I'm looking at the entirety of Brazil. You got the Amazon up, of course, north of Brazil. You've got Colombia. You've got Venezuela. But then south of Brazil, you've got very, very different nations in terms of culture, in terms of racial components. You have Argentina. You have Paraguay. You have Uruguay. And then, of course, you have even the land of the Incas, Peru and Chile on the Pacific coast. A lot of diversity in South America. So what nations in South America are doing it right? What nations are doing it wrong? And where does Brazil stand in the middle of all of that?
So all the other nations in South America. Okay. Can we
go ahead?
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Please.
So Brazil is the only Portuguese speaking country in Latin America. All the other countries speak Spanish. So there's a big divide here. So Brazil is seen as very different from the rest of Latin America. And the rest of Latin America, even though it's big, like you said, it's a lot of different countries, a lot of different cultures, and a lot of different backgrounds.
I think the south of South America may be more white than the United States now. It seems so.
So Argentina and Uruguay, they were both very rich countries. Uruguay was also named as Switzerland of South America because they were very, very rich back at the beginning of the 19th and 20th century. And Argentina was also, they were very proud of their European origins. And they also were like known to be a little bit how can I say that they considered themselves better than the other ones in South America because of this European descent. Politically speaking, right now, I don't remember, I don't recall a single nation in Latin America that's doing a good job in terms of right-wing politicians. Argentina.
Which one is doing okay? They might not have been in a good job, but which is doing the best of the lot? Could we at least put it that way? They might not be doing good by our standards or what we would hope, but is there one nation in all of South America that's doing a little bit better than the rest? Could you say?
Chile was doing great. They had a little bit of a backlash recently with electing again some leftists, but I guess they are turning that around and in certain ways. But Chile was doing very well back in the 2000s. They had a thriving economy. They have a thriving economy. They have very interesting places and a lot of resources. And Argentina as well is very big. It's a really big country. But
yeah,
Argentina just turned awfully in recent years. They're really, economically speaking, I guess they're bearing like 100% inflation per month, something like that.
Oh, my God. What happened?
Well,
that's worse than here.
Incorrectly. So... They were beaten in they had a kind of a right wing back in the early 2010, and then in recent elections they lost and the leftists came back again and they are ruining the country, just a little bit of the same way that Lula is doing right now with Brazil in terms of economy.
All right, let's get into that.
Happening that fast.
If you don't mind the interruption. Well, let me ask you this very quickly. Maybe you could take 60 seconds to answer it now. And I want to get into Lula, your new president, apparently. This is just from someone who's totally unaware of the situation. I would think that if you are an expat, if you're an American expat living in a place like Costa Rica, which is in central Mexico, not on your continent, but a little bit further north, there's no way you're going to drive home, because if you were to drive through Mexico all the way up to the border, you're going to get nabbed by a cartel or something. I mean, there's just no way to get home using the roads because of the third world nature of these countries you have to go through. Can you, from your location, travel through South America safely? I mean, from the different nations of South America, can you travel by road like that?
Depending on the places, yes. The biggest problem is the Amazon forest. That's where everything gets rough, not only in terms of the anatomy, but also in terms of violence. But
I see. If you look at the map of South America, you look at Brazil, all of the cities are on the coast, and then there's this big swath that has no cities, and I guess that's the Amazon. It's right there in the middle.
So it's pretty safe in Brazil. Sometimes people, it's very common for people to off Brazil and other countries to travel.
You could drive
around
down to Buenos Aires, for instance, and not get jacked or anything, right?
Yeah, you can go down all the way to Patagonia and Santiago de Chile. Everything's gonna be fine.
Okay. All right. All right, that was just something to satisfy my own curiosity. But let's talk about what's going on there politically. So two appearances ago, we had this contested election. It was a razor-thin margin, very similar to Trump and Biden. And Bolsonaro was claiming election fraud, et cetera, et cetera. And then in your last appearance, there was basically some upheaval, and it was the Brazilian answer to January 6th, except it was a little bit more militant, I think we could say, and there was certainly some upsetness over the election results and if they were true and accurate and so on and so forth. But since then, it looks as though, well, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Has Bolsonaro given up the fight? Is it Lula's presidency unencumbered? I think the last we heard of Bolsonaro, he was in Orlando eating at a Kentucky Fried Chicken and shopping at Publix, and he was at CPAC a few days ago, but he's not going to be president of Brazil anytime soon. Is that pretty much where we are now with the communist Lula back in charge?
Yeah, pretty much that's it. So there's no way we can turn around the election anymore. So that's out of the question.
That's
so,
a terrible thing because I like Bolsonaro. Yep. I liked a lot of what I heard. Certainly much more than Lula, to say the least.
Yeah, sure. He's the best president that I have ever had in Brazil in my life.
You voted for him?
I don't remember.
You voted for him?
Yeah, sure. Twice. Yeah, I did. And I was hoping for the election. Everybody, I mean, like 50-50, we are split today. So I think that 50% of the people hoped for that.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, yeah, just to accentuate the point on how close it was, I mean, it was basically a 50-50 election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by their count, it was 50-50.
So Lula knows the ways of Brazil's politics. And it's a very rough politic. It's a very dirty, cesspool politic. And in ways that, corruption is just norm. It's just okay. So Bolsonaro, he ended a lot of corruption. And I guess that the deep state didn't like that. Brazilians, politicians in Brazil, they like money. I mean, they go for this career because of the money, because of this, not the status, I guess. I guess it's much more of the power and money. So Lula knows how that when he gets his hands in the money that Brazil can make, how to, make Congress work on his side, make the Senate, and now we have this this tyranny of the judiciary here. Everything that we hear is just, it's nonsense. People were arrested. They were arrested for 2 months because of that January 8th. So, and now they're facing trial. So it's incredible. It's a clown world.
Yeah, so it was so similar and it happened nearly on the same day. Was it January the 8th in Brazil that it happened?
Yeah, January the 8th. That's it. Three years later, right? In the
yeah,
US,
I mean,
2020.
What are the odds of that? That's something. But it, unfortunately, after the challenges and even after the situation down there on January the 8th, which was, again, Brazil's answer to January the 6th, mm-hmm. Bolsonaro was not reinstalled. Was it corruption? Was it legal that he did not win? That remains to be answered. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he was not taken out of that by alternate means of a fair election. What do you think?
We can only speculate. I'm not very inside the political world, but I can tell you that in Brazil, we always have this Brazilian way of doing things, o jeitinho. We always do away with things. So I think that they made deals. And people say, it's hearsay. They say that Bolsonaro made the deal that he would not go to prison. And he went away. He went to the U.S. So he's in Orlando.
I tell you what, I go down to Orlando a lot. If I had to run into Bolsonaro at the Publix. I go to Publix every time I'm in Orlando. I love Publix. They're better than any grocery store we've got up here. If I'd ran into Bolsonaro at an Orlando Publix, I will tell you, that would have been a day I wouldn't have forgotten. Or at the Orlando KFC, because I like KFC too. What can I say? Harlan Sanders, this is a little bit of trivia, folks. You wouldn't know this. Did you know that George Wallace had Colonel Harlan Sanders? I'm probably going to get him canceled now. I'm going to get KFC canceled. He was one under consideration for being George Wallace's running mate before Curtis LeMay. Harlan Sanders was a Wallaceite, so yeah, the KFC guy was based. But anyway, if I could have been at the KFC with Bolsonaro, we would have. I like the chicken pot pie they got there, I'll tell you. But anyway, I'm sorry he's not going to be the president anymore, but he's still around and he can still do good. And but so let's talk about Brazil now under the communist Lula regime. You've got what? You got businesses. We got a couple of minutes before the break, maybe a minute, and we'll come back. We got you for one more segment. We got one more segment with you. Businesses are closing. Okay. Prices are going up. Gas prices are soaring. Government is reinstating rising taxes that were either reduced or canceled under Bolsonaro. Other restrictions, return of old draconian laws against law-abiding citizens regarding gun rights, limitations on number of guns, ammunition, transport and carry of firearms. It's all reverting back to the bad old days, is it not?
Yeah, we're going back a little bit faster to the days of Lula in the early 2000s. And you can tell that the animosity there is in the air. You can see that people are overstressed. We don't know the future. We kind of don't know what he's going to do. Economically speaking, it's been quite disastrous, but not so much. We always try to live our lives in the middle of this battle where the people from the right say a lot of bad stuff and the media from the left, which is ridiculous, their news are just ridiculous. They said the other day that the number of unemployed is very high, but it's low. You cannot understand what they say in the media, so it's quite ridiculous. So we kind of live in the middle of this battle, you know, from right-wingers and left-wingers, which is it's very bad for the people. You can feel the stress.
Oh, believe me, I feel the stress from here and there and beyond. But I'm thankful that we have people like you, men like you down there, to help sort it all out for us. And we've got you. We're going to keep you for one more segment, if that's okay. I know it's getting late. You know, we were talking about late. I mean, it's getting close to midnight down in Brazil. Take a break. We'll be back with our correspondent in South America right after this.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmish. Employees of Silicon Valley Bank are still receiving annual bonuses despite regulators seizing the failing bank on Friday. It became the largest bank to collapse since the Great Recession of 2008. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is watching to see if this becomes a trend.
You mentioned Silicon Valley Bank. There are recent developments that concern a few banks that I'm monitoring very carefully, and when banks experience financial losses, it is and should be a matter of concern.
The bank was closed Friday by California banking regulators, and the FDIC took control of its assets after stock trades were halted over fears about the bank's liquidity. Likely presidential candidate Ron DeSantis is making his debut in the early caucus state of Iowa. The Florida governor gave a speech Friday at a crowded casino in Davenport, where he argued against what he called woke ideology and attacked the Biden administration on issues including crime and immigration. DeSantis did not say anything about a GOP presidential bid, but is expected to run against former President Donald Trump in 2024. More people who traveled across the border are missing in Mexico.
Three women who went to Mexico on a shopping trip have been missing for 3 weeks. The three traveled from Texas to Mexico. Missing persons posters have been put up in the Mexican state of Nuevo León. Two of the women are from Peñitas, a Texas town on the U.S.-Mexico border. They left that town on February 25th to go to a flea market in the Mexican town of Montemorelos. I'm John Schaefer.
The Virginia teacher who was shot by a six-year-old in January is being recognized as the first hero teacher by the Uvalde Foundation for Kids. Abigail Zwerner will receive the grant this spring and will be in charge of administering the grant to future recipients in years to come. This is USA News.
Remember customer service? Yeah, it's almost a lost art. Almost, because actually MediShare is nailing it when it comes to caring for their members. No wonder MediShare gets double the satisfaction rating compared to health insurance. Imagine, you get to talk to actual people, and they're for you.
Well, we're all here for the same thing. We want what's best for the members.
How am I going to help this member today that has come across my desk? How am I going to make sure that what they need is what they get? and as fast as possible.
So, yeah, you'll love the savings with MediShare. There's no doubt about that. But the way you're treated is just plain refreshing.
To be able to pray with them before actually disconnecting that call, you just get goosebumps. And you know it's God, you know, just leading you to that person.
So you can save a lot. But as always, it's people who make the difference. Call now. They are great to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Our march around the world continues, and for the first time, making a stop in South America. And what a stop we're making tonight. I have been captivated as much with this guest in this particular hour as any of them. And they've all been great already this month. And this, our 2023 installment, you've already heard from Nick Griffin, Professor Andrew Fraser, Paul Fromm, Dr. Tomislav Sunic, and now our correspondent in South America, reporting live from Brazil tonight on TPC's March Around the World. So, all right, it looks like we're not going to have Bolsonaro back in office for now, but Trump is working on his next act. Is it possible that Bolsonaro has another play left in him, or is it only decline for Brazil under Lula and what is to come?
Well, we had the lucky of having a right-wing governor for the state of São Paulo, where I live. And we have been seeing a lot of talk about Bolsonaro coming back. I guess he was laying low because of the situation. He never assumed the loss of the election. That's one thing. So he just laid low, stayed down, went to the United States, stayed quiet. And now in CPAC, is his first appearance, true appearance, I mean, like as a politician after everything from the election in October. So I guess he's coming back. We just don't know if we're going to have an election system that will allow anything else other than Lula or the leftist party until 2024. We will see in the elections. Next year we have elections for mayors, and president's going to be 2025, I guess, 26. So we don't know.
But we'll find out.
The state of São Paulo is responsible for 45% of the income of the country. So it's looking pretty good for São Paulo right now. We just don't have the guts for secession. I wish we had, but it would be a lovely thing to have a secession of the state of São Paulo in all this situation right now.
I tell you what, secession is back on the menu up here. And, you know, you've got at least some of the blood there. From the original American secessionists. So let's talk about that and end on a little bit of a good news note. The Confederates in Brazil. So as you know, ladies and gentlemen, March Around the World will segue into TPC's Confederate History Month coverage once the calendar flips from March to April. We'll be celebrating that special event of special broadcasting event throughout the month of April, but there are Confederates in Brazil. So according to our guest here right now, I'm going to read directly, and we knew that there was a Confederate presence in Brazil, but he's going to give you a little bit more background and information on it, certainly more informed than anything I could tell you about it. But he wrote me earlier today this, that Emperor Pedro II offered land and money to Confederates after the war between the states. He knew that the population stock of Brazil was not that good, and he wanted to lift the quality of the Brazilian citizenry. The city of Americana in Brazil was created in the state of Sao Paulo, and a Confederate party is held there every April. So April is Confederate History Month. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm getting this information from you, there is still to this day a Confederate party held there every year. Tell us more about the Confederate presence or the descendants of the Confederates in Brazil. This is very fascinating to me.
So that's a nice story. It's really close to where I live. We didn't go to this party. We planned once, but we couldn't. I'm going to send you some picture, James. I guess you're going to love this. They have a cemetery because they were Protestants and they could not bury their dead in a Catholic cemetery. So they made the first non-Catholic, non-indigenous cemetery in Brazil, here in the city of Americana, another city nearby. And in this place, which is also kind of a farm, a small farm, they do this party every year with dancing. They dress themselves as Confederate soldiers up to this day. They put a lot of Confederate flags all around the place and in the cemetery.
Now, can they display those Confederate flags without fear of repercussion or social estrangement?
Yeah, I put a Confederate flag in front of my house. A guy. This is an interesting story. One guy, I always put some flags in front of my house. I guess it's beautiful, and you can flag something that is important to you. So in April, I was putting the Confederate flag in front of my house, and this old guy from a neighbor nearby, he was passing, walking, and said, "Oh, I like that flag. They're the Confederates and everything." And then we started talking about the Confederates and, you know, the history. So,
all right. Well, there you go. I mean, if you know the truth will lead you back to the Old South, and you'll be okay with that and you'll be proud of that. But it's interesting that all the way down in Brazil, the descendants of these of our people here still exist, and they are in Brazil able to show that affirmation of pride without fear of repercussion. Am I right?
Yeah, I guess that it's because they are small in some way, because, you know, everybody here has the same mannerisms of the left from up there. So I found some places of people like questioning the Confederate flag and everything, but here in Brazil, we just don't care. I mean, we don't have that much of the anger about the flag and everything, and about slavery and the hatred of race and et cetera.
Even here, still in the American South. You can still see huge Confederate flags off of interstates that the Sons of Confederate Veterans put up. Every time I drive down to Florida, going down I-75, and I always salute the Confederate flags as I pass them. You pass about a half dozen on the way down there. I mean, you see them every day still, but certainly more in the rural South or off of major interstates than you do in the metropolitan areas, to be sure. But to know that there are, you know, and I have seen some of those Confederate flags in Brazil. And they're even painted as murals, and they're huge. There's huge Confederate flags down there.
Yeah, they're big. And they say that this party is really good. So I don't know, maybe this year.
I can't believe you haven't been there yet.
I can't believe it. I know.
TPC's Brazilian correspondent, haven't been to the Confederate parties. But listen, it's wonderful to know. I don't know how many people knew that. Certainly we have never had a guest on that could confirm that. But let's give the last, we got about 2 or 3 minutes left. We've covered a lot of ground tonight. The elections, the current state of affairs in Brazil, the different nations that make up South America, the Confederate expatriates who came down there after the war, and their descendants still to this day, who celebrate that Confederate pride in Brazil. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing to impart upon this audience. But with a couple of minutes remaining, is there anything you'd like to cover in closing that we haven't covered yet?
Just send you this story about this congressman from Brazil, the Nicolas Ferreira guy. I guess they're gonna see him in Tucker Carlson in the future. He just wore a wig and he made a speech condemning transgenderism and LGBTQ agenda, and he's making news in the U.S. So keep an eye on this guy. He's a very young guy, very promising. And we hope that he does something good. I mean, he's not backing down anything.
So this is a Brazilian congressman.
I don't know.
Congressman Nicolas Ferreira, basically taking the LGBTQ mob to task?
Yeah. I mean, there were only women allowed to speak in the House at March the 8th because it was International Women's Day. So he wore a wig. He said he was feeling like a woman, calling himself Nicole.
Right.
Yeah. And he called himself Nicole and started to make a speech.
That's the thing. I mean, why couldn't he identify as a Nicole that day? How do we know if he's telling the truth or not? We have to take all of these other perverts at their word. This is wonderful. I love this guy.
This guy, I think he's promising for us.
Hey, Godspeed to him. Maybe he'll be a president of yours one day. And until then, my friend, I want to thank you. God bless you, your family, your brother, who we also know and love and who we have met. And I still have the bottle of Brazilian liquor he gave me. It's all been consumed, of course, but I kept the bottle. Love you so much. Take care. We'll wrap up the show next.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Another installment of our March Around the World is about to come to a conclusion. So we're 2 weeks into March Around the World. You've been to five different nations so far, and we've got at least that many to come in the final 2 weeks of our march that will continue throughout the remainder of this month before we get into Confederate History Month, kicking it off the very first day of April. The very first day of April. No fools here on April Fool's Day, but the very first day of April is a Saturday, so that's when we'll kick off Confederate History Month, Saturday, April 1st. Still two more segments, two more weeks of March Around the World, and we'll see where we go next week. We still have a lot of places left to visit, but so far it has been nothing short of stellar. Keith, I know you would have been here the entire 3 hours tonight had you not had the blowout on the interstate. You had to get towed back to your house, and so we're only having you on the segments where we don't have other guests to sort of eliminate some of the audio discrepancies between having three people on three different means, and it just doesn't sound quite as good. But you did get to hear Tom Sunic in Croatia earlier tonight, and then our Brazilian correspondent. How about that guy in South America? Pretty good stuff, am I right?
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful to hear from him. He's a good personal friend of ours, too. I remember when he was here for one of
that
our
that was his brother. That was his brother. There's two of them.
Yeah,
that was his
okay.
brother.
Well, his
but
brother was really yeah.
Everybody
I know,
in Brazil is everybody in Brazil is our brother, but these two actually are. There are
I feel like
both
I know
donors.
Them both equally well because they're both you know big supporters of ours, and we're big supporters of them. And it's wonderful to hear about that. I particularly was interested in the Confederados. That's what they call the Confederates that fled to Brazil rather than succumb to Yankee Reconstruction after
a little bit of a foreshadowing for our next special series in April, one to the other, kind of blending in there with that. But that is interesting history, is it not?
It is. And it, you know, that whole Reconstruction era is neglected. It's a neglected corner of our national history. And of course, what you do here is nothing but left wing pro-black propaganda nowadays. They don't tell you about the horrible corruption and the persecution of white Southerners that basically caused a lot of white Southerners to move into the interior West to escape that persecution. You know, I've heard it said before that the interior West of the United States is basically the South without a race problem. And that's why all the cowboys in the old movies used to talk with Southern accents, because there was a predominance of Southerners out there, you know, like Doc Holliday and people like that in the West. And
oh, I gotta stop you right there, because I gotta mention, you mentioned Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
My dad's all-time favorite movie is Tombstone, the 1993 version. Val Kilmer playing Doc Holliday. Say what you will. I mean, Val Kilmer played Doc Holliday so good in that movie. His accent, you know, because Doc Holliday was from Georgia. He died in Colorado. You could visit. I actually visited with my father the grave of Virgil Earp, Wyatt Earp's brother. He's buried in Portland, Oregon.
Have you ever been to Tombstone?
I've never been to Tombstone.
But I want to go. We'll have to make a trip to go there someday.
Yeah, who do we know down in Arizona? We got to find out. Anyway, watch Tombstone 1993 if you've never seen it. Val Kilmer is Doc Holliday, who was a Confederate, I believe. Am I wrong in that? He was a Confederate, right? He had Confederate ties.
A lot of these people did. You know, a lot of the...
Now Wyatt Earp was a Yankee. Wyatt Earp was a Union guy. He was a Union soldier,
yeah.
But...
Johnny Ringgold and like that were Southern.
Yeah, Johnny Ringo.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, we're digressing now. But down in Brazil, our people made it down there because,
Because they hungered for freedom, and they did not want to live under a tyrannical Yankee government. And, you know, the past is prelude to the future. We still live under a tyrannical Yankee government down here today.
I got to say this. I got to say this very quickly. The Clantons, Ike Clanton was a Confederate. And this is Rich Hamblin informing me here of this now. Now, the actor who played Ike Clanton in the movie Tombstone, 1993, where Kurt Russell played Wyatt Earp, where Val Kilmer played Doc Holliday, Michael Biehn played Johnny Ringo, Ike Clanton was played by Stephen Lang, who is a Jewish guy from New York, but he played Stonewall Jackson in the movie Gods and Generals. And go and read what Stephen Lang, the Jewish actor, said about Stonewall Jackson. He said after researching and reading and getting into character for Stonewall Jackson, he was basically a believer in the cause, that he came to believe in the Southern cause. You can go read these things, that he defended the man and the cause, Stonewall Jackson and the cause of the Confederacy, in these interviews back around the time that Gods and Generals came out, which was in the early 2000s. Now, would he still say that now, 20-something years later? I don't know, but he said it at the time. And that man is an incredible actor. You watch him play Ike Clanton in Tombstone. You watch him play Stonewall Jackson in Gods and Generals. How could that even be the same guy? He's that good of an actor. Anyway, Keith, I'm totally blowing it up right now, but continue, please.
Well, I like the 1957 version, but the best thing about the 1957 version was the music, the majestic music of Dmitri Tiomkin, a Russian emigre, by the way, to America. In fact, a lot of them, Belennikov and whatnot, that a lot of the music that we identify as, you know, great movie music from the golden age of Hollywood, that was, you know, written and scripted and the product of Russians that came over here. So, that, you know, now some of them were Russian Jews, some of them weren't. But nonetheless, it was an important contribution. And like, you know, that song, Gunfight at OK Corral, I tell you what, if you want to hear a stirring piece of music about as a movie theme, you can't beat that.
How about I can beat it right now?
Who's that? What's that?
When Liberty Valance rode down, the women folk would hide.
Now, who wrote that? Hide. I bet you
was Gene Pitney.
Yeah. Right, yeah, Gene Pitney. But it wasn't used in the movie, unfortunately. But
what was that about? Yeah, how did that happen? I mean, such an iconic movie theme song. It was written for the movie, performed for the movie, but it didn't make it into the movie. And it was a great hit. It was a great hit for Gene Pitney.
I think they released the movie before he had recorded it because he'd had prior recording.
But they wrote it for the movie, and he performed it for the movie. Why couldn't they just hold off until they could get it in there?
I have no idea. But
Oh, my God. We're running. I am telling you, this has been, for me, the fastest show of the year. Every single hour, I've wanted to add more time. We just couldn't get to it all. I want to say a couple of things about March Around the World there very quickly, Keith. We went to Croatia tonight with Tom Sunic. You know, a couple of years ago when we first kicked off this series, we had General Zeljko Glasnovic on. He's a former war general who also is a sitting member of the Croatian parliament. Not the European parliament, not as Nick Griffin served in, but the Croatian parliament. He was, at the time of his appearance, a member of that governing body. And he was with us on all of the issues. This is a guy who, when he served in war, he was a general. He got shot, I think shot in the heart and or
survived.
Near it. And he was in the hospital, and they told him he couldn't leave. It was life or death. And he left and crawled out the window and went back to war. Okay? And he told this story on the Political Cesspool. And then he eventually got elected to be a member of the Croatian parliament. 100% with us on the issue. Ladies and gentlemen, the point of that is there are people out there in positions that are with us, like Philip de Winter, the sitting member still currently of the Belgian parliament, who has been a member.
Anna Vandenbergh, who was also in the.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that very quickly. So Philip de Winter has been a guest on this show a couple of three times. All during which he has been a member of the Belgian parliament.
Is he going to be back for the March Around the World?
Yeah, he's been on March Around the World. He's been on in other times, too. Philip de Winter is his name, or as Nick Griffin calls him, Flip. Flip de Winter.
Yeah.
But he came to Memphis, and he came to Memphis to meet us. And
we showed him around. I have a picture in one of my bedrooms of you and me and Philippe and DeWinter and Anna Vandenbergh there.
Who is a senator. Philip de Winter is a member of the Belgian parliament.
In front of the Van Vliet building on Gayosa Boulevard in Memphis.
And Anka is a senator and a former Miss Belgium, by the way. She's about a head taller than me, and I'm 6 foot two, so you do the math on that. But she's a former Miss Belgium. And we took them around. Love them, and have a great relationship with
Well, they didn't think
Flip.
Memphis was very large because you had to bail out. And I tried to get them to said, no, you got the wrong impression. Let me take you around the whole thing. But they didn't have the time to do it. But if they ever want to take me up on that offer to give them a full and complete tour of Memphis, the offer has been made, and I will follow through on it if they come to Memphis.
Well, I tell you what, you never know who you know. And I'm gonna call Flip, as Nick calls after this. We'll see if we can get him on later this month. And the point is, you go back in our archives, and all of the archives are evergreen. We've had some fantastic, fantastic guests on this show.
Incredible
over the years.
People we've had.
Around the World and Confederate History Month and throughout the year, all the 12 months, all the 52 weeks of the year, fantastic guests every single night, and tonight is no exception. In Croatia.
Well, I remember late earlier this year when we dug out George Wallace Jr.'s interview.
Yeah.
And he told us that Elvis was not as portrayed in this latest movie from Australia. Instead, he was a big George Wallace supporter and told George Wallace that he had a Wallace for President sign in the front yard of Graceland. Wasn't that great?
Now, you can only hear it here, folks, because that was the interview that we did with George Wallace's son. Where else are you going to hear him? Where else are you going to get a million views on the SPLC? Where else are you going to get half a million views on this clip?
Let me slide this in before we leave. I think that what Tom Sunic said is right. Croatia, I think, is something that we need to look into visiting at some time. I think that is a hidden gem in Europe now.
You can have your second family there, Keith. They're all waiting for you, buddy. Hey, for Keith Alexander, for Tom Sunich, for our correspondent in Brazil, I'm James Edwards. If you're a contributor of this show, you will have gotten a letter in the mail this week. Please, 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 please send it back. We can't make it without you. We're on a shoestring budget, but we're doing the job that other people can't do. We'll be back with you next week. We'll be back with you next week.